Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Shankleberg and Kirk Gray. Welcome to thanks for joining me today. I should say.
Thanks, Fred. I know it's the day after Labor Day, so we're catching up with everything, and you just, of course, are still moving, I guess, a little bit.
That's right. We think we've got most of the boxes identified and unboxed. I have a few more books to find shelves for, and Diane's kind of scurrying around the house looking where to put up photos. But we're getting there. And I got my studio. That was one of the first. We got the sound system running, and then we got this my studio set up so I can record and get back, keep on track with these shows. But you've gone through that. You've moved, and we've talked about that before. But previously, in one of the previous episodes, you talked about a circuit breaker. Was that at your current house? Or was that at a...
Yeah. It's the house we just moved into about a year ago. This we've celebrated an anniversary, and it sure was good to have a summer after having two summers of moving to have just stay put, and we know we're here. Yeah. But last winter, yeah, we did have a failure at the main incoming breaker box, the main house circuit breaker panel, and had to have that replaced completely.
What I remember from that, and I want to prompt you to write it up, because you took all these pictures of yeah. this thing, you know, taking it apart, yeah. kind of doing the first level of failure analysis, basically, right. and tearing it down. But we talked, and at the similar time, I had a refrigerator that had a problem. I think it ended up being a circuit board. You know, and so the technician pulls it out, and I'm looking over his shoulder going, you know, let's see if we can find anything on this. And he was like, get out of my way, man. I got work to do.
I know. I think it would be second nature for most reliability engineers. It would, at least for me, I'm always curious as how, and in fact, most important and critical information reliability engineer needs to make a better product is know how the product failed, what failed, and how it failed. Mm-hmm. And I just have that natural curiosity with anything, especially that I have to pay for, mm-hmm. and want to know, you know, was it a wear out? Did somebody make a defect? Was it a poorly assembled product? Mm-hmm. What is it that caused it to fail? Because that's a lot of my decision on, you know, what if I'll buy from that manufacturer again or that model.
You probably get those questions of what kind of car do you drive? You know, you're a reliability engineer. What car do you drive? And right. What washing machine do you have? And stuff right. like that. Yeah, and it, you know, we're consumers, and we're influenced by all the other things that are out there. And reliability is important, but it's like anybody else. It's not always the dominant criteria. Otherwise, I'd be driving a Ford Model T. Because they're still running on the roads. You still see them around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, they've proven themselves, and I could do the work on them. But you, just before we went on air, you mentioned that, and now I'm curious, have you taken apart your TV yet? You mentioned that you had a failure there.
Yeah, I was mentioning that TI, and in fact, one of our ASTR conferences was held at being hosted or helped by TI in Dallas. I think it was back in 1999. And we actually took a tour of the TI facility that was set up to promote the DLP chip, which is a MEMS device that's got about, whatever the resolution is. It's got tiny little mirrors that are able to flip on electrical signals. And by spinning color wheel, they can flip at the right time to, you know, reflect the color. And this is an incredible little chip. If you watch one, you can see the image of a big picture. You can see this tiny little image on the chip. As it's the mirrors are flipping when it's taken out of assembly. But But I bought one of these large, it was a Mitsubishi brand, 73-inch, because of the law, the cost to size ratio, which was rather significant, and was very low cost. It did have a drawback of a built-in wear out that they let you know about, and that was from the lamp assembly. I think it used a high-intensity high-pressure.
Is this like one of those projectors we have in office?
Exactly.
In office, right. In the meeting rooms and stuff?
Yeah. And
$50 and, lamps?
Right. Well, actually, it's $130 for the replacement. Yeah. The amazing thing is I don't believe I've ever replaced that lamp. Mm-hmm. And yet now the actual thing that they never mentioned wearing out looks like it's starting to have its very first wear out mode. And that is the MEMS chip with the mirrors on it, which I calculated has 2,073,600, mirrors on that chip. And one of them appears to have quit flipping, that I get a little bright dot. One of the pixels is now white.
Which means it's just a fixed location and it's just picking up white.
It's in a fixed location and it's just showing a little white dot as if one of your LEDs on a panel had turned white and right. just not change color. Right. So I have to assume my best guess is that since it's a mechanical system and the mirrors actually do move in place, although they're tiny, tiny little masses, they do have inherently will have a wear out mechanism because they flip and they rub against something. And this has been I bought it in 2006. So it's probably been running for 10 years. And I would say that's quite an accomplishment considering that technology back then was not nearly mature as what the technology they're probably using in commercial theaters, because commercial theaters nowadays, many of them use the DLP chip projection technology because it's a digital system. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I've gotten one white dot, and it's kind of off, not in the center of the screen. It's and this is another important factor on a progressive failure. I would say technically that chip has failed. The whole chip has failed, even though it's one dot. This is definitely a degradation, but it it's tolerable. As many of our failures, you know, we sometimes have a product that one function doesn't work, but the other functions do, and we'll use it.
It's like a vehicle. My car gets a stone hits the paint on the hood, and it makes a little chip in it, and everything else works just fine. As long as the stereo works, you know, the sound system works, I'm good.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. I can steer and stop and things that. But if it would have been center of the windshield, you know, right in my line of sight, right. I'd have to go take care of that. Or if the brakes failed. Whereas, if you have a little white dot that's always drawing your attention, that would be a more serious failure. Right. So are you going to keep logging time on this and see if you're going to get more dots going?
That's the good question, Fred. If how long will it be to the second dot? I mean, are we starting to see the knee of the bathtub? Because this is absolutely not. I would not consider this a latent defect in the product. This is
it's been 10 years.
Very much 10 years. You know, it's flipped. As I see it, cumulative flips of 6-7 to the 10 to the 15th in my rough calculations of how many flips these mirrors have had. Mm-hmm. And I thought I got my money's worth out of it. And of course, technological obsolescence, as I talk about, has come to really regular high definition televisions now, because 1080 is not is kind of a low definition. It's now
not there anymore. You got to go to the super high definition or 4K, right. Or high de- I saw one Best Buy sent me an ad yesterday for it's a 75 inch, I think 74 and a half inch screen. It's LED, yeah. I believe. It's 2000 some odd resolution, you know, 2100 pixels across or something like that. And it's 4K high dynamic range. They do a backlight to really pull out the colors and get the full range. And they selectively backlight areas that need the boost. And it was like $10,000 for this technology. And I'm like, I've got one 4K, you know, Blu-ray disc. That's it. Yeah, I don't think so. Not now.
I don't think so. Yeah, what I think is funny is people buying 4K, you know, 30-inch monitors or something. And I'm going, I think that's beyond your ability to your eyes or be able to decipher between the difference at that size of screen. Now, 73-inch or 75-inch, it makes a lot. That's where high resolution and high definition then start to show themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, again, many of the technologies have exceeded a human's capability to differentiate, like in audio technology and others, we can produce much better quality signals than a human could interpret or distinguish between.
Now, back to your TV set. Why do you not believe it's software?
It happens. It's just a constant. It doesn't happen for any particular item. Also, my knowledge and 25 years in reliability makes me lean towards any mechanical system being the weaker link in the system. Mm-hmm. I would find it really unusual for a chip to fail for one pixel output or one driver on one dot of a 2 million pixel array that we would get this failure mode to happen. Mm-hmm. But with a flipping mirror, even though it's a very lightweight mirror and has flipped billions of times or trillions or whatever, it's going to still have, because it's a moving device, it moves, it's going to have some micro wear out mode that's going to impinge on it, or dirt, or something that's going to possibly interfere with that flipping motion. And certainly after 10 years.
Yeah, and that was my next thought, was that maybe a bit of debris, you know, is lodged in that one mirror and fixed it in location, and it can't overcome it.
All right.
Because of its motive force. So that would not be a wear out. That's just a matter of the wrong piece of debris in the wrong place, and it's a cleaning feature or swiping feature or whatever can't keep it clear. Yeah. You know, and you've moved it a couple of times, so it's seen some vibration, some other shocks and stuff like that.
Right.
But how would, now let's say,
but that would be amazing that one piece of debris dropped into one pixel and stopped it. I find that. I mean, yes, it could be.
So how would you? I mean, I kind of know the answer to this. If you let it run, right? You're not seduced by the offers for these 4K TVs. You can hold off for a little while,
right?
And you know, if you see another pixel goes out, say next month, and then two more 2 months after that, that's pretty decent evidence that you've got a wear out, that these things are going. But it really would take opening it up, get a good, you know, good microscope or a SEM to take a look at it really close and look for the evidence of wear or debris or to whatever. But at this point, short of taking your TV apart, which I don't recommend. although I know once you get about a dozen pixels done, you are going to take it apart, aren't you?
Of course. It's not a sellable product and the best value I can get out of it. And of course, my own interest is like everything. Anything that fails and I can open up, I will open up and I will look for it. And, you know, I had a PC fail. I took it all down to the power supply. I opened up the power supply and I saw some bulging capacitors. Now, I didn't take those capacitors out and measure their capacitance or equivalent series resistance or whatever it would do to evaluate the capacitors, but I can pretty much tell you that that's the very likely cause of mm-hmm. of the failure mode I saw.
Well, how old were those capacitors?
They're about 6-7 years old.
That's unusual. They must not been manufactured correctly. These are electrolytic cans?
Yes, they were electrolytic, of course. That's the problem capacitor in the industry.
Right, but I mean, my experience has been it's been more like 15 years when the formula is correct. There's a hydrogen scavenging compound that's put into these systems, and a combination of getting the chemistry right and it's designed correctly so you don't get a bunch of ripple and a bunch of harmful things that creates the hydrogen, they should last 15 years.
They should, and I agree that in the right application and the right formula of electrolyte, yes, they should. The problem, and I think this is a particular special failure mode of a one component, and that is the electrolytics, a sealed can with electrolyte in it, and as you talked about, a scavenger, a chemistry to pick up, and that has been in the past historically been misformulated and mm-hmm. had significant impact on the industry.
Was this a brand name machine, or was this a white motherboard, they call them?
It's a silver box.
Yeah. So they probably got the cheapest caps they could find, and the formulas are a little sketchy on some of those.
Right. And this is a chemical reaction that takes time to occur. Mm-hmm. And it probably, I hate the Arrhenius equation, but it probably correlates to an Arrhenius equation. I mean,
it's a chemical reaction.
Right. And Arrhenius equation has been misapplied to many things, but not to a chemical reaction. That's where it came from.
Well, the hard part with the electrolytic caps is that it's not just temperature. It's also the internally generated temperature and from the ESR in ripple effects.
ESR, right.
So depending on how it's used, if it's used as a standby, you know, line filtering thing and it sees very little duty cycle, it'll last forever. Whereas if it's actively switching and charging, discharging constantly, it doesn't matter what temperature it has, it's going to wear out quicker.
Right. So that same capacitor, Fred, you just pointed out a very important factor, and that is the application of that part. It could be in a very highly derated application or something like that, and it may last 12 years, as you talked about. And another place in the circuit, that capacitor won't last more than 6 or 7. And it should last longer. But mm-hmm. again, in this case, and also with my television, it's kind of reached technological obsolescence.
Microprocessor, time for a new computer, time for a new screen.
I mean, look, I bought and at much cheaper price, too. As amazing as it is in electronics, we get more power per dollar and more performance and better performance constantly. I mean, it's an ever-ending improvement, and I'm happy for it that this computer I bought was probably half the cost of the one I replaced it with, and 10 times as powerful, or, you know, 5.
Or more, yeah.
It's got multiple cores. It's got Bluetooth. It's got a lot of things that I like about a portable computer, and it's a desktop, and it might be my last desktop. I'm not sure, but I hope it is.
Well, one other thought here before we wrap this one up is that, I mean, had a circuit panel break. We talked about TV, a computer.
Right.
You know, I talked about a refrigerator, a couple other things that have failed. Now, the trick is, I would think, if we were good reliability engineers, we could predict what would be the next appliance or IT or piece of equipment that was going to fail in our houses. Can we do predict? So it's tough question, right?
Don't lead me into predicting the future. No, it is a tough question. I think for the MEMS, for the DLP circuit, I think that TI might have tried to test them to wear out, because they knew that mirrors would quit flipping at some point. And in fact, when we first met them in 1999, I think they had a 10,000-hour something like that, or less than that. And I hate to think it's MTBF, but they may have said something like that.
Yeah, they probably did.
But they were developing the life of it. They were having reliability growth. Mm-hmm. So they improved it quite significantly. And the fact that this pixel, this mechanical MEMS, failed before the known wear out mode, which would be the lamp, replacing the lamp. I believe I didn't replace it. I can't remember replacing it. But the lamp was supposed to be the thing that they built in to have replacement. In other words, they made it a modular assembly that you could pull out and put in. And that always drew me back, but I would never expect that the chip would be the one that they, you know, can't be replaced.
Well, we're going to have to treat your TV here like a vehicle, and let's track the failures over the next year or so. And because within a year, more than likely, you're going to know whether it's the wear out mechanism or if it's just completely random. The hard part is if you get like one pixel goes out per month. Given that you've had no failures for 10 years, then we know that we've got something going on. But we should see an increase.
We should.
But even with the statistics, though, I think this is my main point. Even with the statistics of tracking pixel, you know, time to failure for each pixel, and unless it's just dead on a particular distribution of rate of failure and stays on that very solidly, even that is not evidence, sufficient evidence to determine what the failure mechanism is.
No.
Right?
No.
It takes, take it apart and look at it.
Oh,
and,
I'd love
and
to
do the analysis and do the chemical analysis and look at the metallurgy changes and the cross-section the chip and look at the diffusion of the metals. And you could get pretty exotic by it, but that's the only way, in my opinion, that you can really tell what caused the failure.
Sure. But Fred, you know, this is again a problem of what would the worth be at this point for 2006 technology that's evolved past? You know, this is, I would love to do that. It would take a lot of cost and time, but and again, it's a fundamental to the whole field of reliability. Why would we want to look at something that's, you know, 10 years old in technology and we know has been improved significantly to find out those mechanisms?
Oh yeah, I agree.
That's why we never. It's very difficult field to, especially if it's more than 5 years, for anybody to be interested in going back and looking at what really did cause this. Was it true? What we thought was going to happen? Was it going to happen? And did it happen the way we thought it was?
Unless it's a flagship cell phone that's getting a recall for batteries going, catch it on fire.
Yeah, we can maybe talk about that next.
That'd be another one. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Kirk. We'll keep tabs of that. We'll have to set a reminder and come back to this after a few months or a year.
If I continue to watch it, if a pixel dies in the middle of the screen,
it's going to end the experiment. That's right. Yeah. So anyway, Kirk, what we should do is also just ask our listeners, if you've happened to have a DLP TV or used to have one, did you see individual pixels go out, or did you see some other failure mechanism? Did you have to replace the lamp or not? And roughly how often did you use it? You know, if we get a dozen or so people that have that experience, we might be able to piece together a field reliability of this technology.
That would be great.
That would be interesting, and that'd be worth putting an article together on.
Sure.
So if you're listening and you happen to have picked up one of these cool TVs way back when, what's your history? And we're also making the assumption that you're interested in reliability, so you probably paid attention to the nature of its failure mechanism.
Yeah. And, and Fred, can I make a quick pitch for the ASTR to be held in Pensacola, Florida, this September? That's the Accelerated Stress Testing and Reliability Conference by the ASQ and the IEEE Reliability Society, September 28th through 30th, if this broadcast comes out before then. Is it?
I believe it will. We've been pretty short on our buffer when with being okay. So busy we haven't been recorded. So I think it'll be within a week or two when this episode comes out. So yeah, good Great. Good catch there.
Sign up.
All right. So if you're heading to the conference, you know, get in touch with Kirk. I think you're going to that conference this year.
I'm presenting a paper there. Yes, right. I am.
So you can meet up with Kirk and have your T-shirt autographed or whatever. Which we should sell, speaking of reliability, T-shirts. That might be.
Yeah.
Idea. So or if you're interested book. In that, maybe we'll do pre-sales and see if anybody's interested.
Maybe so.
All right. Well, with that, Kirk, let's go ahead and wrap this one up and we'll talk about your TV in another day.
Okay. Sounds great.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.